to our past. It was easy, it was kind, and we made it last. The attack hit me hard. You turn your back and wage this war. I told you I surrender, so why can't you concede? 'Cause your weapon is staring me down. Even though you're filled with doubt, 'cause I know you ever need weapons turned on now. Why don't you put it on the ground? Oh. It's no big deal, just an empty round. But your bullets found their mark. You set the trap and drew first blood. I told you I surrender, so why can't you let go? Been staring me down. Even though you feel me down, 'cause I know your weapon is turned on the nail. Why don't you put it on the ground?
Hello, this is Chuck from Above the Basement Boston Music and Conversation. Singer, songwriter, and musician Ashley Jordan was busking in Harvard Square at the early age of 13 and has become a name to watch on the country music scene. She has opened for Trace Adkins, Sam Hunt, Chase Rice, Rusted Root, Jason Mraz, Christina Perry, and Howie Day, among others. A Massachusetts native, Ashley's beautiful voice paired with her original and earnest songwriting has won her numerous accolades, including a first-round Grammy nomination in 2015. We sat with her at Newbury Fine Arts in Boston, Massachusetts. Founded in 1984, Newbury Fine Arts has been a strong presence on Boston's historic Newbury Street and has continued to showcase a unique assemblage of contemporary artists. Located at 35 Newbury Street in Boston, at the core of Newbury Fine Arts are the dedicated staff and passionate owners. Within a welcoming environment, the gallery personnel engage in established relationships with clients, providing knowledge and service. For more information, go to newburyfinearts.com or call 617-5 360210. The song you just heard is off her upcoming album, He's Crazy, called Weapon. And halfway through, you'll hear another song called Short Fuse. So here is our conversation with Ashley Jordan, recorded at Newbury Fine Arts in Boston, Massachusetts.
Got my Starbucks.
Excellent. Oh, Tivana, my daughter's going to be so jealous.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
I was in a service area the other day on our back from Tennessee, mm-hmm. and we were driving up through, and we went to the Starbucks, and me and my daughter was like 8 or 9, mm-hmm. and I went through Starbucks, and I got a coffee, and then at mm-hmm. the end, she goes, Daddy, you did not tell me they had Tivana? I want to go back in line. I'm like, no, we can't. There's a giant line. That's
no,
a good advice.
The big thing now with Starbucks is that unicorn thing that they
yes,
have.
Yes, I've seen that all over Instagram. Now,
I bought
is
it for
good,
my
though?
Daughter.
Did you try it?
I tried it.
Is it good?
It's like liquid candy.
It's a very Dunkin' Donuts
My sister
thing.
Said, yeah. she looked at the ingredients. She said it's like eating 90 donuts.
Is
that's
it like
that's
all,
how much sugar is in it.
Is it like all food coloring too? Like I was wondering if it's just like a normal thing and they just add the food coloring to make it look pretty.
Honestly, depending upon where you put the straw, it's a different taste.
Uh-huh.
It's like it's sour if you do it this way. Huh. It tastes like it didn't taste bad really. It
was just, well, there's something
it's
on
just
Facebook.
Sugar.
It was just like pure sugar.
Yeah, someone
she loved it. But
it looks like cotton candy to me. So I was like,
it does look
like
cotton candy. And apparently, all the Starbucks, the people who work at Starbucks are complaining about it because it's I don't know.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and it's like sugary, and it's all over them, and.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
But I hope not.
I can imagine like everyone's waiting in line. Like, what do you want? And they all want the same thing. Yeah. They're like, yeah. No.
Oh, God, please.
Like they have these nightmares that someone says like mucho grande. What is it? Super grande?
Yeah.
Unicorn or mm-hmm. not mucho.
See, I don't even know the different grande
Italian,
is
dude.
Either. Yeah.
Oh, right. It's Italian. It's a venti.
Venti.
I don't even
mucho
know.
Mucho grande.
I'm so bad with Starbucks. I'm like medium, large. Like I walk into Starbucks like I'm ordering something at Dunkin' Donuts and they just look at you like.
It's like, yeah, it's just.
How do you not know what to say?
It's like ordering a croissant rather than a croissant.
No, exactly. No, it's a croissant.
See, this is why you want to hit Ron really hard in the head.
You should write a song about a unicorn.
That's a good idea.
You know, this whole podcast is just going to be us talking about Starbucks and unicorns. Thank you for joining us and for schlepping all the way in from Harvard, Massachusetts. I purposefully did not say Harvard.
I know. I was just going for it.
Although, you know, we were telling you before, we talked to Darden Smith, and he was telling a story about 1986. He said he was playing a club Passim.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And someone introduced him as Dadden.
Dadden.
Yeah. So I was
bet. Yeah. And you'll get a lot of that. Like, people from that area, you'll, like, know right away.
Yeah.
And like, just some of us sound nothing like it, and some of us, it's, like, way extreme. So.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Concord.
Okay.
So everyone's like, you don't sound like you're from Boston. I'm like, that's just a portion
I'm from
of
Concord. Yeah.
Because you're from Concord.
I'm from Concord.
Concord.
Well,
yeah.
Actually,
you know where I'm from?
I grew up, I don't know if you care, Chuck, but I grew up in Rochester, New York.
Oh,
but
my
mom and dad still always call it Concord. And I do correct them every time.
Right.
And they say, no, let's go to Concord. We've always said the Concord grape growing
up. Okay.
Yes. Well, I mean, a lot of the commercials, they say it that way, too.
That's because they're not from Concord.
Right. Let's talk to Ashley.
They just want it to sound
Ashley,
fancy, you know.
We want to talk about Ashley, and we want to ask
thanks
her.
Thanks for being here.
Why,
yeah, thanks for having
why
me.
Why are you a country star from Harvard, Massachusetts? That is not.
That is a really good question.
That is not our major.
We like to cut to the chase here.
Yeah.
To answer the real questions
I mean,
here.
I know a little bit of your story, so I know kind of why, but not everybody may know why. It was your grandfather, right?
Oh my gosh,
From the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm. I grew up listening to country too, and so I feel like it was always just kind of in my soul a little bit. And you know, my mom's from Kansas, and my dad's from Lexington, so I got a little bit of both kind of sides there.
Interesting. Explain. Ron doesn't know what an Ozark is. He thinks it's a milking cow. That's what you think.
The Ozarks are awesome. I was there all the time, and I just love going to Kansas City in general, like going to visit family and. Sad to say, I haven't been there in like a couple of years because it's just I've been so busy, you know, with music and life just kind of happens.
Yeah.
So
and is your grandfather? Did he play?
Yeah, he did. It was kind of like bluegrass, country, a little bit folk. You know, so I grew up kind of listening to him play and hearing his songs and stuff. So it was definitely something he wasn't really public about. It was more like for himself and family, you know, we could listen to
be around the fire and he'd pull out the guitar and then he played the guitar.
Yeah, he was like very like shy about it. But if you got him to play, it was a real treat.
That's neat.
And what were some of his influences? What did he play you? Was it all his own music or did he play some Johnny Cash tunes and others?
It was all his own music. But to me, it sounded very Johnny Cash, like with the strumming, very old school. And it's just sounded amazing. I mean, I always loved hearing him sing and stuff. And you know, he passed away when I was younger, so I'm kind of sad that I didn't really get to have that connection. But kind of looking back, I think I was probably about four or five.
Oh,
so.
Wow! So it was a real formative years that you remember hearing.
Mm-hmm.
You remember hearing him play.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. Okay. And we still have some of his old tapes that we, you know, turned around so we could listen to them. I feel like a lot of it comes from that, you know, inspiration. My parents are big James Taylor fans, and Jewel, like, grew up listening to her, Alison Krauss, and just like the folk sides a little bit there as well. So.
Interesting. The genre, the old Americana, I mean, it really is now bands like Punch Brothers. We're big Punch Brothers fans. I don't know if you know the Punch Brothers. And we've had a couple Americana people on. It's really huge right now.
Genres are hard nowadays, though.
They are.
Things tend to kind of blend and mix.
It's a Venn diagram, you know. Yeah. It's like you got your pop and your country and your folk, but it's really neat when it's both. Doesn't matter what it's called.
Right. I think a lot of people put themselves in that box, you know, for a reason, but sometimes it's nice to be in that box, but you just kind of step outside it. Because, I mean, you listen to country radio nowadays and I hear a song like, that's a rock song. You know, that's a pop song. That's a blues rock pop song. So, you know, it definitely, I mean, some people will like hear me play. They're like, oh, I hate country music, but I like you. I'm like,
right.
Okay.
Because you associate it with something.
Yeah, and I think people think country, like old school country, where people are like, oh, it's cheesy and blah, 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 you know, but I think it's really different now and it crosses a lot of genres, so.
There's got to be a couple different words for it now because there's so many different versions of it.
Well, you think about it. I mean, there's people that are ignorant to the type of country just like there are to rock and pop. Like, rock, there's AC/DC, and then there's like, someone could say Steely Dan or... Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not. They're more jazzy. Like,
they call them jazz rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But someone could say, you know, Led Zeppelin in this, and then in the same
blues rock
turnaround. Well, just say rock. I'm talking about like the word rock.
Yeah.
Why do you have to be so specific?
Am I not helping out this analogy? I'm sorry. It's a terrible analogy.
There's
That's
a lot of
why.
Things that fall under it, just, you know, that aren't exactly the same. I get what you're saying.
but back to my original question is. Yeah. Being a country music player out here, or even a listener, did you find yourself kind of, it was like you and your family, and did you have friends who were listening to the stuff?
Or, yeah, I mean, it
that's
was...
a lot, you know, my daughter's listened to whatever anyone else was listening to, so...
Right. It was definitely hard at first kind of stepping into that realm, and I think, you know, I kind of did a lot of the folk scene stuff, which is big in this area, you know, in Cambridge and stuff like that, and...
When you busked.
Yeah, you know, it was a very kind of, like, folky place that I was in, and then, you know, I kind of just realized with writing songs, and when I started doing all that, the songs, clearly, you listen to them, you say, oh, that's country... Just my voice and just what I would kind of steer towards, it was kind of country. So, I mean, it was tough. I joined some organizations that were literally in this area, like New England country and, you know, people who were doing kind of the same things. And I felt like that was a cool outlet because I'm like, other people who like country is like, yeah, you know, because you don't really, I mean, when I first started doing it, it wasn't huge. And then it just started to kind of build with the mainstream country and people were like, oh, yeah, country music. I'm like, yeah. So thank goodness, I mean, that country is as big as it is because people kind of recognize it more now when you're doing it in this area. You know, they have more radio stations that
are country. Cat country.
And yeah, the Bull 101.7's been playing my stuff and even Mix 104.1, which isn't country at all. So I'm thankful for that. And Country 102.5 been spinning my stuff. I'm just like so grateful, you know.
This is Boston, Massachusetts, man.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You know, Chuck's initial question, like, so, you know, Harvard, Mass, country music, growing your fan base, and this is you. Mm-hmm. At the same token, it may seem difficult to do that, but also you become a unique commodity because you sort of have a different sound to you than a lot of the stuff that's coming out on the radio in New England. Whereas if you were down in Nashville, you can still... Yeah. A great song is a great song. Mm-hmm. A great performer is a great performer. But I think that you could possibly stand out more in this.
You've cornered the market in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. A lot of people say, go to Nashville. And, you know, I get that for songwriting purposes and different things. But I'm like, if you're going to go to Nashville, you got to have a plan. Because there's a million other singer-songwriters all doing the same thing. And, you know, I was kind of saying to someone, like, not to, like, you know, say anything bad about Nashville. But I kind of feel like when you go to Nashville, you're really going to connect with other artists. You're not going to connect with fans. Because you can walk around and hand out all the cards. And everyone's like, I'm a musician. They don't want to really be your fan, if you know what I mean. They're trying to, you know. So, I mean, I love going there. Songwriting, like showcases. I think it's amazing. But, like,
experience.
I feel like if you go there to live and play, you have to have some sort of plan. Because you don't get paid to do any and all shows.
Right, or you have to pay for it.
Yeah, or you get paid to play. Or if it's, like, a big deal and then... maybe, you know, it's worth it to be in that area. I love it down there, so no hate at all. I'm just like, people are like, go move down there, and I'm like, and do what? I don't know. I do love it, though.
Do you admit to liking the Patriots when you're down there at all?
Oh, that's, totally.
Did you just call them the Patriots?
The Patriots are...
I actually wore a sweatshirt one time, and then people in the airport were just looking at me like...
Yeah, yeah, they're not big fans, a lot of...
Whatever you do, don't tell them you're a fan of the Patriots, because they may be like,
I was at Dollywood, you know, it's a theme park for Dolly Parton.
Yeah, and Pigeon Forge, right?
Pigeon Forge, where she was born. Fascinating story about her and everything. And there was this guy that was like a maintenance guy that I was talking to, like waiting for my kids in the ride. I had like a Boston hat or something like that. And the first thing he said to me was like, can you believe that Tom Brady was not at all all thankful for the guy that found his jersey. Like, what kind of an a-hole is Tom Brady? You know?
Oh,
and I was like,
no.
First of all, you know, I don't know Tom Brady. You know?
Yeah, you notice how they always go after Brady, too. Nobody else. It's like,
Tom Brady's a beautiful man.
He was a huge Dolphin fan, and all he did was talk about the Dolphins.
You're just standing there like, okay.
Yeah, just waiting for my kid. Yeah. But, you know, back to the plan, you said if you go to Nashville, you need a plan. When you said plan, I think about you when you're 17, which is what, 7 years ago or something, mm-hmm. right? So a lot has happened in 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. so did you kind of have a plan then? Or did it evolve over a quick amount of time?
Yeah.
For music?
I don't know if there's like an official plan. I mean, you would always like there to be one, like I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I mean, you guys being musicians too, like you kind of think out, okay, I want to record an album. I want to put it out there. I want to do a release show. I want to do a little tour. Yeah. So, I mean, I've kind of gone by that structure for each new thing that I've been doing. And I mean, I think recently probably the biggest thing was the competition that I just did for Nashnext, which happened in Nashville and, you know, was a huge deal to get to be the top 10 for country artists across the nation. So back then, if I had told myself like, oh, you're going to get that, I would have been like, yeah, right. You know, because it was something that I was just like, oh my gosh, you know.
Because there's busking and there's busking. Tracy Chapman was doing the same thing you were doing 25, 30 years ago.
You were 13 though when you started busking,
yeah.
right?
Oh, sorry, not 17. So. Mm-hmm. She was in the same area,
yeah.
you know, doing the same. And, and if you heard a young Tracy Chapman, your head would turn.
Mm-hmm.
And so your voice is great. That always intrigues me. Like, was there a point where you were playing guitar and singing that you thought to yourself, wow, I love doing this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I loved it from the time that I started kind of writing songs on the guitar, because I kind of avoided it for a while because I'm like, oh, I'm just going to write my songs this way. And then when I started and I had all my songs, I'm like, I want to go out and perform and see what people think of them. You know, it was a good way to kind of develop, and who would stop, you know, for certain songs. You kind of like develop so many things being in that. I mean, because you're like right at ground level with anyone and everyone, and you know, ambulances and fire trucks going by. And I think it was a great experience. And to this day, like, I'm still open to doing it just because it's fun, you know. And I also love Tracy Chapman, by the way, and I do know that she did that. And but yeah, like when I was like 13, I'm like, oh, you know, said to my parents, like, this is what I'm gonna do, and I'm gonna go street perform and busk in the subway. And they're like, what? You know, like, and so, well, they're like, you're not doing that alone. Yeah, anything and all things that could distract you. It's like, you're like staying in my zone here. People walking over to you while you're singing a song, like asking you for directions, literally as you're.
Plus, you were just a kid.
Yeah.
Was someone there with you to protect you?
Oh yeah, I mean, my parents would come and be like roadies there, sitting there. Yeah, and I mean, you have to be careful because there's a few times where it has some interesting
things
that happen, and also just are like people walk by, and if you have an open case of like money, you know.
Oh,
that's right.
Questionable things there. Yeah. So I mean, it was tough sometimes, but I loved it, and I feel like it kind of built up, because when you go to play, you don't just play for an hour. You play for half the day, and then you go home.
Did they make any good money doing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What was your biggest day?
Hundreds sometimes, you know, and I would kind of put that, you know, into recording and, you know, other expenses, kind of use it as a way, like go there twice a week, three times a week or whatever, and make some money and put it towards music.
That's
so
great.
The plan has always been music. It's never, I mean, I don't know if it's ever been a specific plan.
And at what point did you say, okay, I need to go into the studio?
So I think I did that when I was 15 or 16. I came out with kind of an acoustic type of album.
You recorded it locally?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
I did with Steve Rapson, and I actually met him through a friend of mine, John Gerard, who is a really awesome street performer as well. So we kind of made friends, and then he's like, I have a producer, you should meet him, record, you know, I recorded my first album, so I'm always so grateful. I think it's still up on iTunes, or I forget like where it's available. People are like, buy your first album. I'm like, buy the new stuff, yeah.
Right.
It's not bad, it's just I'm like 15 years old.
So he's Crazy is the latest album, right?
Yes.
And I listened to some tunes on, I listened to the whole thing, but I remember specifically a few that I really liked. So there's a guy, Matthew Reed, that had the quote that in 2015, my favorite album, like everybody else's, was Adele. And then in 2016, I have another favorite album, and you may not have heard of her, but it's Ashley Jordan, and he's crazy. So that's a crazy sentence.
Yeah. I honestly, when he said that too, I was like, oh my gosh. I just thought it was so cool that he kind of listened through all of it and was key. I mean, he called me and told me, he's like, I freaking love this. Like, that means so much, you know, when you like have all these songs. It's, and I held on to them for a while because, I mean, it's still not completely out there, like released. But just to hear that from someone like him, who I really respect, it meant a lot. So.
It's very deep. It's got a lot of soul to it. It's one of those albums that you want to listen to a few times.
Yeah.
And it'll be different each time. So he's crazy. So who is he? You got to tell us.
There was much debate about that title. But I was like, you know what? Sometimes you just got to have fun and put something out there that people are like, what's that about? You know,
it's not. Is it a fact like he is crazy? Oh, or is it absolutely. More like most people think he's crazy?
Is he like an amalgam? All those guys you have in all those videos that you've made, all those guys wrapped into one. Is that what it is?
Yeah. Well, sure. Sounds- I mean, it was really just about one. But, you know, but yeah, I mean, the inspiration for that was really just coming from the song, because it's, you know, it's a fun song. And I just kind of wanted that to kind of represent, you know, and be kind of the tough one to talk about the other songs on the album as well.
Yeah. And you've done some touring. I know that, you know, you've like shared the stage with a lot of people that are more household names around the country, as opposed to you being a household name more in New England. Was it Jason Mraz I saw? You played with him?
Or? Yeah, so I did that at Mixfest that they had at the Hat Shell. So I opened it, and then he came on, Christina Perry, and then he performed.
Oh, yeah,
Christina
Perry.
And then a few other acts. Yeah, so that was really cool. And one of the coolest things was, you know, I had gotten up on stage. I, like, said hi to him in the hallway. Like, there was, like, a sheet of, like, who was playing in what order. Yeah. And he pointed to my name, and he was like...
That's great.
Trying not to... Just trying to be, like, really cool about it.
Was that the 40,000-person audience that you played in front of?
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was insane.
I've only played in front of 4 people. That's my biggest audience.
Yeah, it's, you know, still what? Got 4 in it.
4 people is good too. If they're the right people,
it is. My mom, and I think there's a mirror in the room.
So Jason gave you the thumbs up.
Yep.
And that must have been an amazing experience to play there.
It was incredible.
In your hometown, so to speak.
I was trying to figure out what this was, and I was asking Ron earlier about it. The Grammy nomination.
Yeah.
Explain what happened there. What is that about?
So for a little while, I was with a label, Mind Over Records, which is under Universal. And I had released just one song through them. We were just kind of like a trial type of thing. And it ended up with some of their other artists that they had put that through the system. There's kind of a process. So they had me send, you know, the CD, and with just the one song as the single, fill out some paperwork, and they're like, oh, we just want to send this in with some of our other artists. You know, no worries, you're new, and we're doing this for our other, you know, well-known acts, and like, no biggie, we're just going to throw it in there. So we all just kind of forgot about it, because there's really not a shot when you're new and they don't know you and they don't see your face, you know, because the type of marketing that takes is when you're with a big label. So then I found out kind of months later, I was getting information from them and showing that it was going through panels, which means they go and they listen to the song and they talk about the song, they discuss it. And I got the paperwork back that had gone through that first round that they all listened to, and they said it goes through. You know, just even that recognition that they listen to that song, they love that song enough that they were going to push it through with the other big acts, I was just like floored. And I got actually the official invitation, you know, in the mail to like attend the Grammys just from getting that first look and nomination. It was pretty surreal.
Were you thinking, okay, they like this song, but this song is so much better. Why don't they like
always,
this song?
Yeah, always.
Bills are piling up next to the broken kitchen door. I tried to start the damn car, but it won't run anymore. You sit there on the couch, you won't tell me about your day. Oh, the silence kills me and it keeps us at bay.
Tell us about your writing style or how you approach a song.
It's a little bit different, I would say, than a lot of the country stuff that's, you know, know, on the radio right now, which is a lot of that kind of upbeat, feel good type of stuff, which I will do, you know, some of, but really I feel like my niche is kind of telling the stories and emotional, tough subjects sometimes. With my song Angels, that was a really personal one that I was really only going to do like kind of just a small single release for it. And then, you know, after that happened, I was like, I'll put it on the album. And, mm-hmm. you know, so that song kind of was talking about kind of like a dysfunctional kind of relationship. Just the fact that other people could, you know, understand that and that they liked that vibe, I thought was really cool. So
what I'm gathering is that you mm-hmm. come from a story, lyrical message type of place first.
And absolutely. And
then bring it into melody.
Yeah.
Like you have progressions that you play and mm-hmm. then.
So if sometimes it varies. There's never like a set way, because sometimes I'll have lyrics that I've kind of had down on my phone or somewhere random, and then it just found a melody and that turned into a song. And sometimes there's a melody and then you just start adding the words to it. Yeah, I never have a structured way of doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the funniest thing I always tell people too is that the best songs are written at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., you know, like when you've had a lot of coffee or like whatever, it's like 4 a.m., you're like, oh yeah, this is the one. So yeah, I mean, it's never really like a set way, but I think some of the songs just from feeling kind of come out, you know, talking about like a certain subject or, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. But a lot of the music is just talking in an honest way, you know, not really trying to push any agenda. Just from stories or about friends or about myself or, you know, just inspiration in general.
Do you write with anybody else?
I haven't really. I mean, this whole album is just me, but I'm definitely open to it. I've done a few sessions before with some Nashville people, and that's always really cool. But yeah, I would love to do more of that, you know, collaboration and stuff like that.
Well, who's the guy you sang with on the album?
Oh,
no,
okay.
Trouble.
Yeah, my
that's
previous...
That's a cool song.
Yeah, my previous producer, he's a, you know, musician and singer as well, and we wrote that one together for my last album.
I love that
Yeah,
song.
He's got a really cool voice, so that was definitely a treat, for sure.
So to that point, when you sang with him, when you take a song into the studio,
mm-hmm.
actually, let me before I even go there, do you... When you go into the studio, do you have your songs all written? Are they all done when you're walking in that door?
Usually. It's usually the way that I've done it, because I think I usually go in like knowing the songs. And I, you know, there might be a few things. Well, I'm not sure about this part. I'm not sure about that part. And you just work it out. But yeah, I never go in with the song that I'm like unsure about or like, oh, I don't know if I like it. Like I'll ditch at least 30 songs before you get to like the 10 or 12, because you want it to be the ones where you feel like these are the ones, you know. But yeah, getting to collaborate with my producer Adam on that song was really cool. So we wrote that song in the studio together and like, let's record it. So that was like super spontaneous, and that's always a treat.
Enjoy the studio?
Yeah, I love it a lot. My current producer Joe Merrick is out of Marshfield, and he's incredible. He like plays every instrument, started out as a drummer, also sings, does bass, does guitar. You know, we're doing the songs and he's like, oh yeah, I hear bass, oh I hear the, you know, and he's just like thinking of all these different parts like while we're doing it. So that was like super helpful, because sometimes if you go into a studio you don't know, they're like, okay, well, we're gonna hire out all these people, and it's kind of cool to sit there with someone who knows every instrument to say, okay, I could kind of hear this, I kind of, you know, I hear this on this part, and like, let's go in and just record it. You know, so we saved a lot of time doing things that way, and I think we just kind of clicked. Like he kind of understood my music, and he does like rock kind of stuff, so a lot of times it was just like a cool mix, you know, personalities and stuff too.
Yeah,
so
especially with a producer.
I mean, it's hard because you can go in somewhere and they're like, oh, I'm just an engineer, so they just record it. So you get the best of both worlds when it's, you know, a producer who is also a musician and they can kind of hear you out on some of the songs too. So
now, are you looking for or have you thought about a dedicated producer?
I've thought about that. I've also thought about maybe doing kind of just more singles instead of kind of the full album thing. Like EPs, I know, are really in right now, because it's just like 3, 4, 5 songs of what you really want to put out to radio. Because I know, sadly, I'm on the album train, but a lot of people aren't. I love albums. I love opening them and reading them, and I collect them. But that's me. And a lot of people are like, oh, do you have download cards for a song? And I'm like,
download cards.
Yeah, so I'm still kind of learning the new.
You should only record things on 8-track.
Exactly.
It's going to come back. I know
it's going to come back. Yep. Yep.
Chuck has an 8-track player.
He's
got a vinyl.
Vinyl is cool. Vinyl.
You just call it a vinyl player? Oh, God.
Vinyl is back, though. I've seen people selling their merch and like having vinyls. Like, I think that's really cool.
I always buy vinyl. Mm-hmm. If you're a vinyl?
Not yet. I think it'd be awesome to do that, for sure.
That's a goal of mine, to come out in vinyl.
We should do all the podcasts on vinyl. No one would ever buy it.
That would be
so cool. I'd buy one.
I know you'd buy one.
My mom would buy one.
And your mom would, with her vinyl
player.
I'll
buy 10.
But, you know, back to the studio. We just went in the studio, and we went in with a set. It's an EP, and we went in with a certain number of songs. But when we were there, there was a song that I wrote, and then we went in and we said, you know what? This has got to change. Mm-hmm. It wasn't working.
Right.
And we kind of switched gears and did something totally different.
Yeah, there was a lot of times where I went in, I'm like, oh, you start to do it kind of full band, and then we're like, oh, I don't like this at all. And then it just ends up me and my guitar, which is how it usually always ends up. But yeah, I mean, because it's tough for me because, you know, I love doing band stuff, but I don't trust people. So, like, you know, it's hard to, like, have, you're like, oh, I hear this part, I hear that part. I'm like, nobody screw it up. Like, you can trust yourself. You know no one else is going to, like, screw it up or anything.
Right.
Yeah, Ashley's going to go far. I can tell.
You know, it's tough.
You need a little of that.
Well, especially, like, when you are a singer-songwriter, like, you're so spontaneous. Like, I could play a song and play it tomorrow and play a few of the things.
A little different, yeah.
A little bit different. Yeah. But the bass player doesn't know that. Right. They're like, keep up, you know. It's great to play full band. I love that, but a lot of times it's like anxiety about it. So,
but when you play with people, it's a it sort of can be a family when you're gigging, mm-hmm. and then you start That's to have true. That mental telepathy that bands have had over the years. Mm-hmm. Now, when you play out, do you have a core group of people? Like if you do like a mini tour?
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I've started to put that all together. But a lot of times, like when you are doing like a tour where they're only supporting, you know, you or like one other person, sometimes the the poor band gets kind of left a little bit in the dust. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely do it, you know, and if my band could go and travel and stuff, then I would definitely consider it. But sometimes it's just easier, you know, to just do like a few people or just myself.
Back to touring. Have you ever done the hop in a van?
Oh, yeah.
Hit the road? What's the longest tour? What's the longest tour you've been on?
Oh, gosh. Was it
just you and the driver, or did you go with the whole band? Or?
Sometimes, like, yeah, we've even, like, just with my family, we're like, we're going to go here. We did a couple shows a little bit spread out, like in New York City, which was so fun.
Where'd you play in New York City?
I can't even remember
you
the name of the
play Rockwood Music Hall?
Yep, that was one. Pianos, New York City was really cool. And then there was this other kind of cool new place. It was like a cafe, but at night it was like this kind of live venue. It was really cool. We actually went there, but that was when that huge, do you remember that huge snowstorm last year? Pretty sure it was at that same time. Yeah. So they basically closed down all of New York, and my manager is like, look, like the show's not happening. And we're all like, no, no, no. We all drove here.
I know.
Everyone's here. Everyone wants to party. Everyone wants to see the show. We're going to have a show. So we just ended up finding a different venue, and we're like, this is what we're trying to do.
They're
like, oh, yeah, yeah, come on in. So we ended up having it at like this place called Ryan's Daughter. Have you ever been there? They have this cool upstairs, like.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Where is it? 85th and 1st?
Joe says it's on 85th and 1st.
There it is.
Who needs Google?
I know, right? If you go upstairs, they have this really cool old school kind of room upstairs, and we just did the show in there.
When did this last album come out?
My song Weapon was like a couple months ago.
A couple months ago.
Yeah, it's a great video.
Yeah, and you're very prolific with your making videos.
Oh, thank you.
As a matter of fact, I thought I saw Kenzie in one of them. It was the one that you did for the marathon bombing, that song.
Oh, that's right.
I saw her in the audience.
Yeah.
Has she been in more than one?
She's made a few appearances. Yeah, she's wicked talented. By the way, she's in Australia.
I know. Oh. She's in acting school
right now.
You were around, I don't know if you knew. I used to be an actor.
So Chuck was an actor, and if you ever need someone in a video who's
that is so cool.
Who fits this... You know,
are you joking? Are you serious?
No, I used to be an actor.
No, he is
that
an actor.
That is so awesome.
Once an actor, always an actor.
I love you're just laughing like, haha.
Well,
No, we're serious.
I really was.
We just bring it up every episode as a joke now. But,
I always bring up the fact that I read a recent autobiography by Phil Collins. And so I just needed to throw it in there. Do you know what Seinfeld is?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, well, I mean, it all went off the air in 94. But Seinfeld, every episode has a Superman in it somewhere or a reference to Superman.
Do they really?
Did you know that?
I think I did know that.
By the way, I'm seeing him live
in Worcester, of all things.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wait, I was going to ask you, speaking of Seinfeld, no. What were we just talking about before that?
He's an actor.
Oh.
What kind of things did you do, like, for acting?
Yeah, let's talk about me. Shut up.
Yeah, let's go.
I did mostly theater.
That's awesome. Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, no. You ever see the movie Titanic?
I knew it.
He wasn't in that at all.
I wasn't in that. Yeah. I was in the theater when it.
When you were it was there when it, was,
when it came out.
Okay,
fair enough. I sat in the theater.
That's awesome.
But I wanted to mention this song about the Boston Marathon. So what's it called again?
It's called New England Tears.
New England Tears, right? I remember a couple years ago. It must have come out because the bombing was on 2013.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. So where have you played that? Anywhere?
When it first, you know, it was tough because when I came out with it, I obviously, it was kind of more of like a personal one. I just kind of sang for friends and family, and I was kind of just encouraged to record it and put it out there and see if anyone liked it. And I think it really hit home with a lot of people. And, you know, we did the video and, you know, they were playing it in a lot of different places and they were playing it, you know, on the radio and stuff. And I really appreciated that because to me, it was such a personal song and and it's a personal thing to everyone in this area. It's a touchy subject. You know, I'd had a song as well about, you know, all the shootings, because there's a point in the song where it kind of talks about the school shootings and
right.
It's just like, when is this going to end? Talking about just the violence that's happening with the bombings, with the shootings, like, when are we safe? Like, when can we just say it's over? When will this hate end? You know, when will this pain end? So it definitely tackled a lot of different things, and it was a personal one, but I'm really glad that I put it out there for people to hear.
Yeah, it's like the new norm, unfortunately.
I know.
But it's good to talk about and sing about. And I work at Spalding Rehab occasionally. There's a festival every summer called Set Sail that has music.
Oh, wow.
And I think that song would be fantastic. So we should probably talk about that if you're interested.
Because of course.
For all the amputees, all of them.
Yeah.
There are 15 amputees, I think, in the city.
Wow.
And they all went to Spalding.
That's amazing.
But anyway, yeah, we should discuss offline.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very interested.
It's so cool that you write songs about important subjects, too. Because they're not just all about, you know, what Chuck writes about, which is just like unicorns at
Starbucks.
And, you know.
I haven't played you my unicorn Starbucks song yet, so don't
it
knock it until
like
you hear
a
it.
Hit.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. But if you do need an actor, seriously, you know Chuck's email.
What's your plan this summer? What's going on?
Now, I'm definitely going to release a lot more singles like off of the album, so probably a few more, and then, you know, I want to have a bigger release for the album. And I think another part of the plan is recording new music, because, you know, you get to that point like where music is so new to everyone else, but you're like sick of playing it.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, so I'm like ready to like, you know, get a list of like all these new songs that I want to record. And I'm hoping to maybe do some of that in Nashville and just try that out. You know, that's always kind of been something that I'm like, oh, that would be kind of cool to do. Because they have some amazing studios in that area. So I want to do that. And I think just continuing with, I have a lot of shows that I know are probably coming this summer. So some around here and hopefully some more traveling. Nothing completely set in stone yet, but hoping for some good stuff. So
yeah, we got to see you play around here. Are you playing?
Love to.
Did I see you playing a Bull Run? Was that you?
I did this past year a couple shows. Yeah, I love the Bull Run, by the way.
Yeah, I've never been there.
They're awesome.
We got to go. We're like, I'm in Acton.
So many people we know have
played there, and I've never been either.
Yeah.
We're losers. We need to get out of the house more often.
Hey, we're in a gallery on Newbury Street.
That's
right
true.
Now.
We are in a gallery.
By the way,
we'll talk
about that. I want to set the stage right here. So Ashley's here with myself and Chuck.
Yes.
And we're looking at these amazing paintings by Peregrine Heathcote, who is a British artiste that combines some old school, almost photography-like, with like really cool lighting. And
did you just say artiste?
I think he's an artist too. And Emily, I just probably horrified Emily by saying artiste, but she's here. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah,
thank you for coming.
Such a beautiful room.
Yeah, the name of the art gallery is the Newbury Fine Arts.
Newbury
right?
Fine Arts, yes.
And www.newburyfinearts.com.
35 Newbury Street. And I'm hoping my Jeep is still parked behind the building.
With the guitar in it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm hoping it's there?
Yeah,
it's there. Sweet. All right, good.
Did you at least hide it or something?
It's on the floor.
Okay,
it's covered with, you know, unicorn droppings.
Emily, would you mind telling us just a little bit about this artist?
So
So Peregrine Heathcote is a British artist that we're very proud to represent. So Newbury Fine Arts is his New England or his East Coast representation. And he's an artist very much influenced by his experience growing up with an auctioneer. Mm-hmm. And his one set of grandparents were famous aviators in World War II. And wow. His father did at some point run the Rolls-Royce Motor Club. So in a lot of his paintings, you'll see a gifted vintage Rolls-Royce that Peregrine owns. And so we like to say he's a man that loves his toys. Yes. So he has boats and planes and fanciful kind of landscapes, but all harking back to this wonderful vintage era through this beautiful costuming and very, very gorgeous, sinuous colors and light. So we're really pleased with these new paintings. We should mention that his newest paintings are very influenced by the fact that he's now the director of a charity which seeks to aid wildlife on animal preserves or game preserves. So by doing that, they send out vets whenever an animal is in need. So in some of these paintings, you get the nice little giraffes or elephants.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
We're really, really pleased with this show.
How long does it go for?
The show will run through May 20th.
Amazing.
I love those, especially those.
Amazing.
The automobiles.
The carnival
and the boats.
Tent one, I think, is like my favorite, where they're dancing. Like, that's just stellar.
It's a little steampunk with the glasses there, too.
It is. I like that.
Yeah.
What's that?
Steampunk?
Never heard of that.
Look it up.
It's a good name.
Look
for
it
a
up.
Band. Steampunk.
Steampunk? Oh, God. There's got to be a ton of bands named Steampunk. Well, yeah, so thank you. We're going to.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll set you up, and we'll have to hold the microphones at your guitar, but we'll figure it out. All right.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I'm going to play you guys a song off of my last album. It's called Weight of the World. Thank you.
is the best I can do.
This is going to be a newer one off of my He's Crazy album. It's one of the nicest ones off there, though. This is, it's called Blue-Eyed Boy.
And I looked up and I asked God, why is it?
Ashley has such a beautiful voice. You have got to check her out at ashleyjordanmusic.com and purchase her music as well as see her performance schedule. We loved talking to her and want to thank her for sitting with us. We'd also like to thank Newbury Fine Arts for graciously opening their gallery to us. You should definitely drop in and see the current Peregrine Heathcote exhibit that ends May 20th. They are at 35 Newbury Street in Boston, and you can get more information at newburyfinearts.com. Go to our website at abovethebasement.com where you can sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique.